Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Are we better today? Probably not. Yeah, it's a work in progress. You know, this is by no means the Bills giving up or trying to take a step back or anything like that. I would just hope that people know I'm as competitive as hell, and I ain't giving in. It's April the 3rd, 4th, again, what? April the 3rd. We play in September. So let's be patient and let us work through this. This organization and our fan base needs to trust that we're going to trot out a damn good team come September. And that's our plan, and that's not changing.
He's right. They don't play until September. There are many things they can still do to address the glaring deficiency at receiver. 5 of 6 receivers from last year are gone from the Buffalo Bills. They are rebuilding that room from scratch. Stephon Diggs, obviously the biggest domino to fall. But as we were saying last segment, we now enter the draft 3 weeks away, knowing that they're going to be looking to draft receivers. And they may have to give up some draft capital in order to get themselves in position to get a guy, because there really aren't a lot of options out there. We'll talk about that more specifically coming up. But Chris, I don't dismiss the idea that the Bills will be fundamentally different than they are when September rolls around. They'll have a chance to work with the guys they have. They'll have a chance to see who else is out there. And they still have Josh Allen. I mean, if in the past it was Josh Allen basically relied upon to do everything and Diggs wasn't as heavily involved down the stretch when they turned it around last year, then, you know, they'll just say, hey, Josh, find a way. Here's your cast of characters. Find a way.
Yeah. No, I think that's why they're trying to get out of this, Mike. I mean, really, all due accounts, we're seeing what the Bills make a transition of something we've begged for a little bit or made, you know, shined a lot of light on the last 2 years. By all due accounts, yeah, they're flipping over this room. They're doing what we've talked about in wait. They're not that explosive at receiver. They got one of the greatest arms in the history of the sport, and they got nobody that can really separate there, right? And to me, like, and again, Diggs is not that guy that just blows you away either. It's about route running. He can still scare you deep, but that's not his bread and butter, right? But to go out and get a Curtis Samuel is, you know, in it, when he's healthy and going, is three rockets up your ass type of guy. Mac Collins, he's that guy that's always been, wait, I'll run deep and clear it out for everybody underneath, and, you know, I'll be open deep, you know, if it's the right coverage. So I think they are trying to make a concerted effort to be a little less, like you're talking about, Josh Allen having to make magic on an 11-play drive with a scramble and a laser and a quarterback design run and then another laser. And then they're starting to go, wait, let's get a guy that can, like, catch the ball and run for 40 yards and help out Josh Allen a little bit. I think that's what they're in the process of doing up there in Buffalo.
There are some parallels between Buffalo and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, right.
Chiefs 2 years ago, trade Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs have won every Super Bowl played since they traded Tyreek Hill. But,
right,
of course, they won one with Tyreek Hill as well. You know, you look at the Buffalo receiving options. You look at the Chiefs receiving options. The big difference I see, though, is tight end. Mahomes has Travis Kelce, And they're waiting for, I think, high-end performance from Dalton Kincaid, first-round pick a year ago, and Dawson Knox,
right,
who's done well.
Right.
Those guys may get leaned on a lot more moving forward in this revamped receiving core.
I would think so. And, you know, with the offensive line showing the ability to run the ball and be a little physical, you know, hopefully that's where they're maybe going to go here. Two tight ends. We're going to run the ball and be physical and powerful. You're going to overplay that. We'll spread you out. We got tight ends that can work the underneath intermediate stuff. And if you play on them too hard, we got some guys that got some heat over the top with a guy that's got as much heat in the right arm as we've ever seen. And we're going to do that. That, like, how it looks to me right now, Mike, to what you're saying. I would agree. That's where it seems like it's going. And then, you know, where do they add that receiver in the draft like you talked about? Do they go first round and just stay put and wait for somebody there? The second round, I think there'll still be some good guys available. Or do they make that move to go, no, we're going to move up and get a guy that we like, we believe in, and we think can be a difference maker right away? That's what I think we're all, you know, going to be intrigued and looking for in Buffalo.
We've discussed many times in the past the fact that if you expect the quarterback of the team to essentially be manager on the shop floor, part of the executive team that gets the message across to the players, there's a certain consideration that he is owed when it comes to management decisions.
Yeah.
So, how much did Josh Allen know about the fact that Stephon Diggs was being traded? Here's Bean on that question from yesterday.
I have not talked to him since the move. Josh and I have a pretty regular conversation on things, and I think it's important for me to make sure if I think something could happen to make sure he's not blindsided. And so I would, you know, without going into the discussion with Josh when the last time we spoke was, I did alert him that, you know, there had been some inquiries and it wasn't 100% off the table.
So he, look, and again, this is all being filtered through the things that Brandon Bean believes he can say publicly and the things he knows
that's
that he
right.
doesn't think he can say publicly.
Right.
There are dualities to this life when you're talking about everything you say is going to be scrutinized for anything that can be used against you.
Yeah.
The truth sometimes gets massaged, to say the least. It's possible they were keeping Josh Allen apprised every step of the way. And why wouldn't they? Because I feel like this is about, as we were saying earlier, the remaining years of Josh Allen's prime. We're going to remake this team so that he can lead. And any impediments to him leading the team are going to be cleared out. And to the extent that Stephon Diggs was an impediment to Josh Allen taking over this team, guys who saw the gestures that were made on that snowy day in Buffalo when they lost to the Bengals and who might have been influenced by that, those guys are gone. Diggs is the one, and he's gone. This is Josh Allen's team. You lead him, or you follow him. He will lead you, and this is our effort to try to take this great talent that we have and parlay it into at least a Super Bowl appearance. Hopefully a Super Bowl win from the perspective of the Bills fans that have been waiting forever for that day to come. But first, you got to get back there. It was just a given they're going to get back there with Josh Allen. They haven't gotten farther than the divisional round
right.
since what? What year did they lose to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship?
2020.
Was that 2020?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They haven't gotten back to that game since 2020.
Right, yeah. 2020, they were there. 2021 was the great game in the divisional round with the overtime not getting the ball. 2022 was the Bengals' loss, and 2023 was the Chiefs' loss again. So, I mean, you're right. And I think you're right about, like, your assessment there. They're making sure, hey, there's a leader of the team. He's the guy. There was a guy that, you know, maybe was – you know, affecting that leadership and how the team works framed. But we talk about that all the time, right? I mean, teams want, hey, they want their quarterback, and especially when it's Josh Allen, they want him to be, you know, wise man said once, sergeant general, right? They want him to be the sergeant general and be the guy that's totally in charge there. And yeah, this was affecting that, let alone I think it was affecting the harmony of the locker room and the organization as well. And I think that's what Buffalo is telling you, you know, with this move, that they just weren't willing to risk that anymore with Stephon Diggs, right? And then, yes, of course Josh Allen knows what's going on. One, I mean, it was from both sides, like I said. Diggs was done. He wanted out. The Bills wanted him out too. So I'm sure he had a pretty good inkling from either side there that something was going to happen. And, you know, good by them to kind of keep him in the loop. They should, like you said.
Why do you think Stephon Diggs would want to leave, though?
He's got that to me is the biggest question. That is
the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
That might. Right? Yes.
Unless he sees C.J. Stroud as moving in that direction based upon what he did last year.
Yeah. I know. He is, right? But, like, it's a – Mike, I'm glad you brought that question up because that is the thing I texted a lot of people in football when I was having this conversation yesterday. We'd go through it. And then I would always kind of go, what I don't understand is why does Diggs not want to be there so bad? What was the end of it for him that just made it, I got to get the hell out of there? That to me is, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Because, you know, like we talked about earlier in the show, nobody's had the ball thrown to them more since he's been there in Buffalo, right? They've had great success. He's got a talented quarterback. You know, that doesn't happen often. So that is the side of the story that I would love to know where it went wrong in his eyes, that he just couldn't take it anymore either.
And my guess would be that bizarre series of developments June at the mandatory minicamp was where they all decided, like, there's a shelf life here. And remember at the time, we talked about the possibility of him being traded. It was after June 1. So the cap consequences would have been the exact same, $31 million this year. And it was a given back then, oh, they'll never do that. They're not going to trade him now. They'll trade him after June 1 next year if they're going to do something. They're not going to do it now. They can't have that $31 million dead cap charge next year. And that's exactly what they ended up taking. And I think what they decided in the aftermath of that weirdness, let's just get through this season. Let's give it our best effort. And once they got into the season, and I think, you know, when they started so poorly, they were disappointing. It looked like they weren't going to make the playoffs. There was the hit piece on Sean McDermott, and I've had multiple different people. We had Josh Allen tell us at the Super Bowl. Before that, who's blanking on the cornerback from West Virginia? Rasul Douglas said it. Somebody else said it as well. The idea that it was I think Bean may have said it as at the combine, that the way that McDermott handled that when he spoke to the team after the hit piece with the thing about the kooky 9/11 reference from a few years earlier, that's what galvanized the team and carried it through to farther than we thought at that point it was ever going to get. And that kind of allows you to, you know, we all have something. Whatever the issue may be, there's always something in our life that we know we eventually have to deal with. But for now, we're going to focus on other things. We're going to slide it to the back burner. And I think that's what the Diggs relationship became. We got other issues. We may not even be here to make a decision about Stephon Diggs the way things are going. Let's just kind of slide that to the back burner. Let's get through the season, save our jobs to the extent they were in any jeopardy, and then we can figure it out after the season. Yeah. That sounds like what they did.
It does. It sounds a lot like you brought it up already, you know, and I thought of this as well yesterday, the Chiefs situation a little bit, right? I know Tyreek Hill wasn't maybe as publicly outspoken and, you know, demonstrative on the sideline and all that, but we know that last year in Kansas City, even though nobody threw he had the most targets in football, he was complaining and wanted the ball more, and there was some things behind the scenes there that I think they were like, wait, between age, he wants a new contract, we're, you know, it's annoying in our locker room, Mahomes is our leader, that's it, we're done with it. Now, that one was crazy because it's like, whoa, it's Tyreek Hill. Like, he's definitely still the best receiver in football. That's right. But it does feel like there's some similarities there as far as that situation. And you know, again, I don't know, you know, why Diggs is angry at that, but it definitely feels like there's some issues there.
We were talking before the show that as we were brainstorming potential destinations for Diggs yesterday, we both thought of the Cowboys and the Texans. And the caveat with the Cowboys, or not the Texans, the Chiefs, Cowboys, right. Chiefs. The caveat with the Cowboys was, well, what's your quarterback situation? And you were saying before the show you had thought of the Texans, and I should have thought of the Texans because here he is, young quarterback who has shown great potential, who can be a guy who serves up a lot of passes in Stephon Diggs' direction that you know, Diggs can ride out the remainder of his career as Stroud moves into the front end of his prime. In hindsight, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even think of it. You thought of it. It just didn't come out during the show. And ultimately, you know, when it happens, it's one of those things, damn,
yeah,
it makes a lot of sense.
It does, right. That's right. It does. It makes a lot of sense. You know, it's they got a little bit of everything now, right? That's where, you know, sometimes I use this analogy of, like, you know, wide receivers. It's like you got to have a – it's like a basketball team. You got to have a little bit of everything, right? A guy with size, you got to have the point guard, you got to have the shooting guard. He's the shooting guard. Can kind of do it all. Then they got a Tank Dell who's really kind of just like the jitterbug guy, maybe the point guard. And you got a Nico Collins on the outside that's, hey, the bigger body, you could throw it up to me. I can run by some people down the field. So they got a little bit of everything to offer as far as, you know, talent at that position and making it hard for teams to match up against their group there. And that's where I think there is beauty of it. And, yeah, you know, you couple that team now with that offensive line, which is damn good when it's healthy. Dalton Schultz at tight end. Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce at running back with that quarterback and that offensive scheme. Yeah, that certainly, I think, opens my eyes and makes me think differently about the Houston Texans. I mean, I already was going AFC South, they can win that. We know that. But I think this puts them into more like what you talked about. Like, whoa, the gap might be a little closer between them and the Chiefs than we think, right? It makes you think, well, they're maybe a little more of a Super Bowl contender than I gave them credit for, you know, before yesterday.
They've had some great performances from Noah Brown as well. John Metchie III, who missed his first season as he was dealing with cancer. He's in a position where he's got untapped potential. And what a turnaround this is for the Texans.
It's incredible.
Who, entering last year, were the one team that most, if not all, would have agreed have no chance to make the playoffs. And, of course, they made the playoffs. In a very difficult AFC, they made it. They won that division. And now, after all that Deshaun Watson ugliness and the Jack Easterby influence on Cal McNair, how that team got dragged down with Easterby trying to pretend to be the general manager. Once they cleared him out, you know, in hindsight, that may have been the best move. All due respect to Jack Easterby, that may have been the best move that they made. Clearing out that influence, allowing Nick Caserio to run the team, hiring D'Amico Ryans to be the coach, and off we go. It does show you how quickly a bad team can turn it around. It helps to have three first-round picks from the Browns as well, as you offload a quarterback who didn't want to be there anymore.
That's right.
But still, they're in much better shape than we ever would have dreamed, and the sky is the limit. Now, the schedule, as we said earlier, not easy this year, but they played last year like a team that can compete with anyone.
Yeah, they did, right? I mean, you look at it and what they've done on defense and free agency, you look and you go, well, they're legit. Right. I mean, we'll see how that translates on the field and how legit it is. But I don't think there's any team we're going to look at in football and go, oh, wow, you know, the Texans are overmatched. Right. That's not happening for sure. Right. It's talent throughout the roster. And I think, like, you said it right. I think Easterby was probably a little bit of distraction, that whole organization. And I think really we got to give Nick Caserio a lot of credit. He's kind of, he's a quiet GM. He's not one that we talk about or see a lot. He stays in the background. And I worked for Nick in New England. I could tell you he's the most diligent, detailed guy in the world, right? That's where he's amazing. And I feel like Nick Caserio, you know, a big part of, like, flipping the team over too, you know, didn't chase pipe dreams when he first became the GM. He didn't give, I'm just going to get a star player and give him a big contract. In fact, Mike, I think he kind of started the new trend that we saw this year at free agency of, let's just sign guys to 1- and 3-year deals and go from there. Remember he did that a few years ago and we were like, man, look at all these guys the Texans have on a 1-year deal. I think because he knew I'm going to make moves in the future and I don't want to be, you know, tied to anybody for too long with money and all of that. So they've made a lot of right moves here the last 2 years. It's really incredible, the turnaround. And I do want to give Nick Caserio
credit. Look at that
activity. It's incredible,
put that
right?
Back up. That's incredible.
Right.
I mean, they've let a lot of guys go, and those are strategic decisions to move on from certain players in an effort to get better. And what they've done, the number, again, we were having fun earlier about the Cowboys saying we're all in and not doing jack diddly squat. The Texans didn't say anything. They just went all in.
Yeah.
Danielle Hunter, Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs, leading that list of guys with star power, name recognition, and still gas in the tank who can come in and make a team that was already competitive even better.
Yeah.
What a turnaround
right.
by the Houston Texans yeah. in only 1 year.
No, that is right. And then, Mike, you said those are the star names. You know, in football world, guys like Fadu Kassi at D-line, DeNico Autry, right? Azeez El-Shaair at linebacker. I mean, they're really good football players. They're not superstars. Azeez El-Shaair is borderline Pro Bowl type, all pro type of guy for my money. So not only did they get the, you know, guys in flashing lights that you put a banner about, they got some, you know, like, what do I want to say, upper middle class guys to go along with that, that you go, whoa, that guy's going to help out the team. Man, I mean, DeNico Autry, I mean, he could play DN, he could play D tackle. He's phenomenal in so many ways, right? So that's what you got to love. They really got something brewing down there in Houston.
Yeah, I don't want to give short shrift to their schedule because looks to be difficult. Winning that division guarantees that you're going to play four other division winners. No, five other division winners.
Yeah, right.
Because you're guaranteed to play the three division winners from your conference. You play all four teams from one division and another conference, and thus the division winner. And that 17th game will be division winner from one other division. It rotates in the other conference.
Right.
So it's going to be a challenge this year for the Texans. And we will see a lot of the Houston Texans and C.J. Stroud Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night. And I've already made the open plea to the NFL because, you know, they always listen to everything I suggest. Texans at Cowboys, Thanksgiving middle game, because Houston does play at Dallas this year, and it's no longer tied to which network had, you know, it used to go back and forth because there had to be an AFC visiting.
Oh, yeah, right.
They can put whatever they want
right.
in that spot in the late afternoon on Thanksgiving. Texans Cowboys would be a massive rating. They don't have to do it because of the captive audience, but boy, I'd love to see that game in that spot.
Yeah, I hear you there. I would too. Battle of Texas on Thanksgiving, right? I mean, they dislike you so much though, that now that you said it, they probably won't do it for sure. But either way,
can we get the Cowboys? Can we have any other team than the Texans? Please, maybe, any team but the Texans on Thanksgiving.
Now they haven't got a chance. Maybe we can get on NBC. Maybe we can get Houston, you know, hosting Buffalo on that third game, you know, that night. That wouldn't be bad either. I'd take that too.
Couple of Thanksgiving games in Texas. I would like that. I think Houston hosting Buffalo becomes one of the marquee games of the season. Houston at Kansas City becomes a significant game. Houston at Minnesota with Diggs going back to the place where, you know, he had the biggest play in the history of U.S. Bank Stadium, the Minneapolis
right.
Miracle. He's reunited again with Case Keenum. They were together in Buffalo, and now they're together again in Houston, even though Keenum likely won't be playing. So a lot of fun times coming this year involving the Houston Texans. Let's go back to Buffalo before we put this thing to bed,
yeah.
at least for now.
Right.
Here's Brandon Bean talking about this challenge of replacing Stephon Diggs via available options in free agency, and we'll show you in a second there aren't many, or the draft. Here's Bean.
The years that Steph's been here, he's clearly been our one, right? I think we can all agree to that. I think it's more of a volume, you know, a variety of guys. We obviously, I'm not standing up here today saying, look, I've got another one to walk in the door, and we know we're still working through the cap. At 28, you know, if all our first-round receivers are gone and the next guy is well into the second round, but we have other positions, we're going to take the other position. Like, we're not – you still got to take good football players. And even if we don't get the player that everyone is looking for in April, it doesn't mean there's not other ways to do it. You know, I would hope you know by now I'm going to turn over every stone, and our staff is – to continue to look to add depth and competition to all those rooms so that when it's time to play, that we have a team we're proud of and that's going to go out there and give us a chance to win.
Talk about this role in the offense from
the free agency options aren't great right now. Tyler Boyd, the one name that stands out the most. There are others floating around. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who came on in the postseason.
Definitely.
Had a couple of great catches.
Yeah.
Had one against the Bills. Remember that one where he kind of reached up and kind of half helmet, half shoulder pads? You know,
yeah.
Not an easy catch
first
to make.
First play of the third quarter,
had the catch
I think.
That iced the yeah. game against the Kansas against the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC Championship. So he's out there. And, you know, I have dismissed the idea of trading for like a T. Higgins, but all of a sudden, because he's franchise tagged with the Bengals and who knows what it would take to get him, and you have to pay him, and you have $31 million in dead money devoted to Stephon Diggs this year. But all of a sudden, Buffalo becomes an attractive destination for any receiver who has high-end talent who isn't currently happy where he is at the present time, if the Bills could somehow pull it off beyond the available free agents. Again, OBJ, I didn't mention him. He's out there. Michael Thomas, who had a great year in 2019 and injuries have kept him from doing much since then. But Chris, could you see? I mentioned Higgins. Devontae, I mean, it seems like Devontae Adams is all in with the Raiders, even though we don't know who the quarterback is going to be. I just think once guys have a chance to digest what happened yesterday, you're going to have some guys thinking, man, I'd like to get to Buffalo.
I'll go be a number one
get
there.
A lot of balls
right.
thrown.
Yeah.
I'll look at what they have. I'll walk through the door as the number one guy, and I'll get 150 targets this year.
Hey, listen, I don't disagree with your thought there, right? And obviously, Brandon Bean, like you said, they're looking for all options. They're going to do whatever they got to do. They're not going to mortgage the farm and ruin the team just to get a receiver, though. That's what he's pretty clear about. But, yeah, it's situations like that that you look, oh, they do something there. Now, it's the Bengals, right? And it's a team that, you know, is semi kind of a rival of them and in their division. So, I mean, in their conference. So I don't know if they would do that necessarily right now. And I think the Bengals want to make it work with a T. Higgins. But, like, hey, how about a situation like out in San Francisco? Brandon Ayuk, right? That'd be one that I'd go, ooh, okay, wait, well, what's he asking for? What's the money? What would they trade him for? You know, he might not be getting the offer he wants from the 49ers. Would he say something, you know, to the Bills? That'd be one that I'd go, well, he might be waking up today going, hey, Mr. Agent guy, can you call the Bills and see if they'd be interested in me? That I get, right? But, hey, they're going to have options in the draft. It's a deep class. It's just about who falls to them at the right spot, or do they make that aggressive move. But I do think even late in the second round, there'll be a few guys there that you go, oh, that's definitely going to help Buffalo out. Is it a superstar? Can they strike gold like a DK Metcalf or an AJ Brown in the second round? I don't know about that, but I do think they can get a guy that can definitely help the offense.
Draft is clearly the way to go, though.
Yes.
You get caught up in the recognizable names, the
definitely.
Guys with proven talent. There are so many great receivers coming out of the draft every year. Now, it's like the running back position because of all the 7-on-7s, all the passing that's done now at the lower levels of the sport. Receivers are ready to go. They need to find a guy they can plug right in. And I think as you do the evaluation, if you're the Bills, it's not what's his ceiling. It's what's his floor right now. What can we expect from him right now? We'll see what he develops into. We can't take a project. And maybe they can take one later. They need to come out of the first 2 days of the draft, the first three rounds. They need to come out with somebody that they're confident can go right in, is
right,
game ready
right.
in the NFL level, because they need somebody who may debut as their number one guy as a rookie.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree there, right? And I think that's where, you know, they're going to have to do their due diligence on, you know, studying this group and really looking at who, you know, fits that mold, that void, whatever. But, you know, even in round two, they're sitting there at 60, right? Well, there's a guy on the board at 45. We didn't think he was going to be there still. Hey, you know, that second round pick we got next year, this year's pick right now, we're going to move up, you know, 15, 16 spots because we think this receiver's on the board. I think all that stuff can certainly be, you know, viable. And again, too, we've seen receivers that are kind of talented that we view as, whoa, that guy's pretty good. And for some, because of the reasons you explained and whatever else, they're still on the board late in the second. So, you know, that'll be interesting to go. But, like, you know, that was one thing that jumped out to me about the receiver evaluation. And I had my top five and those guys and all of that. But, man, one of the things I made clear in the podcast is, holy cow, there are a lot of guys that you go, yeah, he might not be a superstar, but he's a starting NFL receiver, and he's a guy that you wouldn't be shocked if he got 70, 80 receptions as a rookie and really helped out. But yeah, it's definitely everybody's going to be watching Bill's receiver move. What are they going to do for the next 3 to 4 weeks?
And it's the age-old chicken and the egg question, too. What makes a great receiver? Does the quarterback make the receiver? Does the receiver make the quarterback? That kind of takes us back to where this all started yesterday with Stephon Diggs raising the question of whether or not the person who pointed out that Josh Allen's success is not necessarily tied to the presence of Stephon Diggs. You sure? Diggs clearly knew what was coming when he posted that. And now we'll find out. Can you take any receiver who is marginally competent and able to, get off the line of scrimmage, run his routes, catch the ball when it hits his hands? Can Josh Allen make that guy into a superstar by just feeding the ball? I mean, look at Khalil Shakir last year. How much of that is him? How much of it is Josh Allen? And when you have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, the receivers around you necessarily are going to be better than they otherwise would have been. Let's take a break. When we return, speaking of receivers, Rashee Rice, finally breaking his silence on the street race that resulted in a 6-car pileup on Saturday night. We'll show you what he had to say and react to that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Rashee Rice posting on social media yesterday that he met with the Dallas Police Department investigators regarding Saturday's accident. I take full responsibility for my part in this matter and will continue to cooperate with the necessary authorities. I sincerely apologize to everyone impacted in Saturday's accident. He keeps calling it an accident. It's an avoidable accident. I call it an incident. It wasn't an accident. Like my son used to say when he would, do something and break something or whatever, it was an accident. Well, it was only an accident because you were doing something reckless. If you don't do this reckless thing, there is no accident. Look at that video. Yes, it's an accident. They didn't mean to hit any other cars, but the way they were driving, it was inevitable that something was going to happen. And he says he will continue to cooperate. He hasn't been cooperating. He stayed away from police for 4 days. The big question is, was he driving that Lamborghini Urus? Was that him getting out second from the passenger seat front row, climbing over the console after he was driving the car? Because the criminal penalties for leaving the scene of an accident with injuries, if you were the driver of the car, are significant. That's what he's facing. And yesterday's statement sheds no light, Chris, on whether or not he'll admit that he was driving.
Well, I'm glad we got a statement. I'm glad it's going in the right direction. Like you said, it's a stupid incident. It is. It's a reckless, and it's something, when you're dumb, or not dumb, young and dumb and just, adrenaline and let's have fun. Those are the things you do there, and you cross a line there where you go, wait, that went from, young and we're having fun and, having no cares to like that was crazy and somebody could have got killed. And that's where we don't love that. Right, but I'm glad he's taking the right approach here as of now. Now, that video, again, anybody with common sense would go, wait, nobody got out of the driver's side door. Two people got out of the front passenger door. And it's the guy that's dressed like him, as we know from. So, I mean, by all due accounts, I feel like it's going to be hard for them to deny that he wasn't driving here, right? This is one of the first things we pointed out on Monday morning when we watched the video and all of that and watched it. I went, wait, that guy in the front right, it's a second guy out of the same door there. Right. And we'll see where it goes. But yeah, by all due accounts, it looks like he made a slick, quick move there to jump the console and get out of the front seat on the other side.
I don't know how far into the CSI Dallas this goes, but I have had people suggest that if he refuses to talk, if he refuses to say he was driving, if no one else in the car will say who was driving and you can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, what kind of DNA, what kind of evidence could they get from the wheel to show that he was the one of the three guys in the car who was sitting there? So if he was driving, it's going to be hard for him to avoid responsibility. And if the story comes out that everyone who was in that car refuses to tell police who was driving, that's a bad look from a PR standpoint. This is where the NFL and or the Chiefs, who have separate powers to discipline Rashee Rice, at some point, I think they're going to acquire an obligation to apply employment leverage to get Rashee Rice to do the right thing here. If he was driving, it can't just be everyone in the car keeps their mouth shut and invokes their right against self-incrimination, that we've found a loophole to avoid responsibility for leaving the scene of the accident. They all left the scene. None of them will say who was driving, so nobody gets in trouble for leaving the scene of the accident. That makes no sense. And there is a way, I think, for both the Chiefs and the NFL, when it comes down to it, to put the squeeze on Rashee Rice to do the right thing here.
Yeah, you're probably
right.
He
says he wants to do the responsible thing. Right. It's time to do the responsible thing. Rashee, if you were driving, I mean, look, he leased the Lamborghini. He reportedly owned the Corvette. They were out there racing. They clearly were out there racing. And this is part of the responsibility. When you do that and leave the scene, it's the combination. It's the double whammy. The ridiculously reckless street racing and leaving the scene, and now there's a mess that needs to be cleaned up. We'll see how committed he is to doing the right thing. We'll see how committed the Chiefs are to Kansas City. One day after the landslide defeat of the measure that would have extended the sales tax for 40 years to help renovate Arrowhead Stadium, the Kansas City Star reports that Kansas legislators already looking for a way to lure the Chiefs across the border. We want the Chiefs to build a stadium in Kansas City. So as the Chiefs start looking for someone that will give them the free money that Missouri and Jackson County won't, there might be a solution not that far away where you don't even have to change the name and you don't have to worry about your fans getting upset. They're just going to a different place in the region on game day.
Well, I mean, that certainly seems like of all the things you think of or the sensible options, that's one that makes sense. I mean, from that standpoint, definitely. Right? I think it's going to be interesting as we go here, though. It is the Chiefs, you know. It is Mahomes and Kelce and Taylor Swift, and it is extreme star power. I'll be interested to see if more cities come forward and try to make a pitch and say something here right now and just, you know, take their shot, see what happens here. But I think something like that, if they can't come to a resolution there in Kansas City right now and Jackson County, you know, that's probably something that I would think is going to happen in the region somewhere, just not exactly where they are right now.
One of the big concerns, I think, if I'm another area beyond Kansas City metro, if I'm going to pull the political levers to get myself in position where I can put an offer on the table that attracts you, I don't want it to be the leverage that causes you to get a better deal locally. Then why have we done this? It's like signing a restricted free agent to an offer sheet, like the 49ers did with Brock Wright of the Lions. You do the negotiating for someone else, and they just come in and match it. So if somebody else shows up like Vegas did with the Raiders and says, here's your free money, and it spurs action to get the Chiefs to stay put, either where they are in Jackson County, Missouri, or in Kansas, why do you want to be used that way? The only reason for some other location to do it, if the NFL is giving any serious consideration to expansion, and you've kind of helped them and shown you can put the money together, they may find a way to get you a team if they view you as a city that is ready to take a team. So this is a dance that's going to play out over the next few years. We'll see how it goes. Deadline spur action. We were saying that yesterday. The lease doesn't expire until the 2030 season, but we're going to get there one season at a time, closer and closer and closer. And through it all, we've talked about this possibility of Dallas luring a second team. The Chiefs started as the Dallas Texans, and Mayor Eric L. Johnson already back on it, wants him at the Cotton Bowl. The Dallas Texans, of course, they wouldn't be the Texans, back in Dallas proper, not Arlington, where the Cowboys are, back in Dallas proper. Wouldn't that be something if that becomes viable? But Chris, we were talking during the break, there's no way in hell Jerry Jones and the Cowboys are going to allow another team to invade their region. Whatever the Chiefs do has to be voted on by a majority, supermajority, 24 of the 32 owners. They're not going to let the Chiefs move to Dallas. It's just not going to happen. Maybe somewhere else in Texas.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe they use Dallas as a way to leverage Austin or San Antonio, but there's no way there's going to be two teams in Dallas.
No, I wouldn't expect it, right? It'd be cool to see. I mean, I know Dallas is exploding as far as population and, you know, a place where people are moving to. I would think they're getting close to that, you know, spot of, you know, like an LA or a New York where they could probably support two teams. But, you know, I do like I get a giggle out of the mayor. The mayor obviously doesn't like Jerry Jones. There's something there. I'm just going to say it. I don't know, whatever. But he likes, I mean, we know Jerry Jones doesn't want that to happen, and he would never want that to happen. And he likes, you know, poking the bear with this one. Retweeted that second tweet we showed there from Mark Davis, right? The mayor retweeted that. So, you know, it's obviously something on his goals that we see here. And then, you know, added on that, I think he probably likes needling the Jones family a little bit.
And the concept isn't ridiculous because you've already got a stadium in place. If the root problem is we don't have an acceptable stadium and you've got Jerry World, which could accommodate another team, especially an AFC team that plays a very different schedule. We see the Jets and the Giants do it. We see the Chargers and the Rams do it. It can be done. And it's more money for Jerry Jones. But he's still not going to want that. As population bases change, you're going to have cities that may be able to take two teams. We talked about Chicago. Dallas isn't crazy if Jones would do it. I just don't think there's any way they can do it. There they are, hanging out 2 years ago. We talked about it, and he agreed. A second NFL team based in Dallas needs to happen. Just kidding. We did talk about it, though. Jerry Jones and I have always gotten along great, and he understands that I have a job to do. I'll post more on this soon. A mayor's job is never done. See, the Cowboys don't play in Dallas. That's the problem. They play in Arlington. Eric Johnson wants a team in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl.
Right.
Unlikely, but now that the Chiefs are suddenly in play, I mean, nobody else is really in play other than the Jaguars if they don't get the deal they're trying to get, but they'd go to London. There's no one else currently in play for a move to another city. And what team is it? It's the team that's won two Super Bowls in a row. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Go out, London. Go all in on the Chiefs. Make them an offer they can't refuse. Make them the biggest team in the world and go all in on it. Let's see it. I'd like to see it. It'd be good for your business with all your copy-paste snarky comment. It'd be incredible. I'd love to see somebody make some an aggressive move to try to steal the Chiefs right now.
Before the show today, I did have an item that was copy-paste with no snarky comments because college football is thinking about doing something that I have been saying for a long time now is the only way out of the mess that a corrupt system has created for itself. There could be, with the involvement of the NFL, a college football super league that would change everything. We'll talk about that next here on PFT Live. That is one hell of a jacket. When you wear something that flashy and that unique, can you ever wear it twice? And this is stressful to me. The idea that I have clothes that I only have ever worn once because I can't wear it again because people don't expect me to wear the same thing twice. Where do those clothes end up? Where do those clothes end up? Well done. Well done. I had forgotten all about that whole,
man,
you know,
you are
business on the top, party on the bottom from one of the days that I was here for Football Night in America. And I probably got the exact same shorts on today. I don't. But why? There's no reason to be hot and uncomfortable when
great look.
You're not going to be on camera.
Yeah. Great look. Yeah.
Hey, all that's ever seen is from the waist up. Like, I don't even need to wear pants on Football Night in America in studio. I'm standing behind that desk. Right, I could wear shorts there too. I could wear jeans at least.
Yeah. Nobody wants to see your white chicken legs. All right, put some pants on there and dress accordingly. All right,
hey, gristle baby, bone gristle and a little bit of muscle. Okay, I saw this yesterday, and it was one of those things like, well, there's too much going on in the NFL. I'll take a closer look at this when I have time. Woke up this morning earlier than usual, and started reading this article from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel and Andrew Marchand, and it's like, holy crap. There are some power brokers within the college football system who have finally realized the current model is broken. It's done. There's no way to save it because everything that happens under the umbrella of the NCAA with all these independent universities coming together, any rules they try to apply are antitrust violations that had been hiding in plain sight for years. And the reckoning is here. Currently, they expect the potential liability to be north of $5 billion and counting with every additional lawsuit that comes out about all the different rules that have kept players from getting fairly compensated in order to keep all the money for the schools and not give any of it to the players. So, Chris, what they are proposing, blowing up the current system, conferences go away, 70 teams guaranteed a spot in this Super League, 10 teams that are kind of at large that you would have the European soccer style relegation and promotion.
Oh, okay.
They have 80 teams in all.
All right.
8 10 team divisions, 8 division winners make it to the playoffs, 8 wild card teams based on record, not based on polls, not based on star chamber that tells us Florida State isn't good enough. It's all based on what you do on the field. 16 teams make it to this postseason. It's got a long way to go. The NFL is involved. Brian Rolapp, one of the top executives at the league, is advising this group, talking to this group. University presidents are involved. Whether or not it happens remains to be seen. It's going to be complicated. It's going to take a lot of work. But it's an acknowledgement that what's happening now, the NCAA is dead. And the sooner they acknowledge it and try to come up with the new reality, the better off they're all going to be. This is the first major effort to come up with a new reality.
Yeah, it is cool from that standpoint. It's good that they have an acknowledgement that, you know, the system needs to change in some degree, right? The basic, and I haven't read a bunch of this. I really just was aware of this morning. I didn't know we were going to talk about it. Either way, I think I got enough of a feel here to say a few things and all that. But, like, you know, one, like, yeah, the system needs to be different. We know that. But I would want to know a few more details about this first before I jump in. You know, the first thing I want to know is there going to be a salary cap? Because if there's not a salary cap, I don't really give a damn about all these divisions and all that, right? I mean, so go ahead. Do you got something to
say
there?
There would be
100%.
They have been fighting, and I'm glad you mentioned that. They've been fighting against the concept of unionization for years because they don't want to pay the players anything.
Yeah.
Unionization is the thing that saves a Super League. The reason the NFL has a draft, which would be an antitrust violation because it's 32 independent businesses. The reason they have a salary cap, the reason they have a franchise tag, the reason they have all of these rules is because you've got 32 different businesses that created what they call a multi-employer bargaining unit, where there's one union that negotiates with this 32-team collective. You'd have the same thing in college. It would be one unitary body that would negotiate with a union that covers all
that's
the
essential
players. So you would have rules along those lines. Salary cap, transfer rules. You know, maybe you sign a 4-year contract and you can't leave. This would be a way around the dynamic that currently exists where I'm just going to transfer. I'm entering the portal. The NFL doesn't have a transfer portal. It's called free agency. You're committed for the first 4 years of your career in the NFL, unless they want to trade your contract. So that would be the product of the collective bargaining that would happen once there is a union representing all the college football players and the various universities on the other side. They'd hammer out the rules. You can't have those rules now because they're antitrust violations.
That's what
they finally realized.
Yeah.
We need a union so we can have what otherwise would be antitrust violations.
Yeah, that's going to be key to me, at least, to get it by a guy like me. Because, again, I don't want to see divisions and all that, right, with the current way we have right now. And, like, Alabama, Georgia, and LSU are all in the same division. and they're definitely one of the 10 best teams in football, and one of them doesn't make the playoff system, or just because of that. So how they divide it up, having an even playing field, is, to me, paramount about that. Because we're coming off a year, again, where I think one of the dumbest things I've seen in American sports history just happened. A team that lost two games in four freaking years, and it is, other than the Chiefs, I would say the greatest thing in American sports here recently, as far as team sports are considered, they didn't get in the college playoff because they played another team that was great that's in their division, and their coach came from there, and it's a rivalry, whatever, and they didn't get in. So that's messed up, and that's where it's got to be tinkered with, and it's got to be an even playing field. Because if it's not an even playing field, the top teams are not going to get in a lot of the times, and it's just going to be weird, the whole situation.
Here's where the problem's going to come from.
Yeah.
The teams that currently run the sport, the conference, specifically the SEC and probably the Big Ten that runs the sport, isn't going to want to give up the power they have.
Yeah.
The problem is the power they have is going to be gone anyway. They need to realize that it's over. The NCAA is dead, and they're just hanging on as this reckoning comes to full fruition. And as one of the team presidents, I think, or school presidents, Syracuse's chancellor said that, these lawsuits are going to bankrupt the conferences. So they need to get ahead of this before it does completely and totally collapse. And you're going to have pushback. You're going to have resistance. But at the end of the day, this is going to even it out. This is going to save some of the schools that are now mid-level. You know, West Virginia's
president is involved in this. Right.
For good reason.
Sure.
Because this is a way for the teams that can't compete with the current system to level it out again.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That would be the way to do it.
I mean, that would be the way we all view college football and want that to happen, right? Pete went to Boston College, right? Pete loves his team. They're irrelevant in college football right now, unless it changes. Some of those schools, the private institutions, Stanford, Boston College, West Virginia, that middle-class school as far as sports is considered, they're going to get left in the dust with the way the current environment is. But, yeah, it's a good start. We'll see where it goes. I don't know how realistic it is or if it's going to happen, but I like the basic guidelines of it so far.
They got to do something because the current system will not last. Change is here. The reckoning's arrived, and it's going to be expensive, and it's only going to get more expensive if they don't change. Let's take a break. All right, we know the Bills need a receiver. What other position should they be targeting in the draft? We'll pivot to AFC East draft needs next here on PFT Live.
One of the things I always go is, man, the Bills, they got all the steak and potatoes and everything like that, right? Mm-hmm. I just sometimes go, I think they just need a few more playmakers. Kind of give me your state of the union on, you know, idiots like me kind of saying stuff like that.
No, you're not an idiot. I think, listen,
yes, he is.
You're always wanting as many playmakers. Who wouldn't?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Playing basketball, you want as many Steph Currys as you can put on your team.
Right.
But I always believe it starts up front. And I thought this was the best O-line we've had since Sean and I have been there. We would love, you know, if it works out in free agency or the draft, to find another playmaker to add, you know, whether it's a receiver or whatever position
it is. Yeah, gotcha.
That was Brandon Bean with us at the Scouting Combine. We're going to take a closer look at the AFC East team draft needs over the balance of the program. Let's start with the Buffalo Bills. They can't leave the 2024 draft without addressing what? Now, we know receiver is a given.
Receiver's
other than
obvious.
Receiver,
right,
what
right.
position must they address?
I think it's D-line is where I look at, right? I think they got their O-line in a pretty good spot, right? We know receiver's obvious. There's two spots that are obvious to me, and that would be probably D-line and then something secondary, right? Tre'Davious White's not there. They drafted Kyrie Elam in the first round a few years ago. That hasn't worked out, right? The safety position, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer aren't there. So to me, it's D-line or something there in that back end, probably safety more than corner. But I think like what Brandon Bean just said, it starts up front. And that's where you go, wait, okay, Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, right? That's pretty good, right? But Von Miller up there in age, Daquan Jones, some of the other guys they have, right? They're no spring chickens anymore, to where I think they got to start thinking future difference maker that way too. So I guess D-line would be the next position other than receiver for me, Mike.
Yeah, for me, it's that secondary. Tre'Davious White was released. You mentioned Hyde and Poyer are gone. You look at the guys they have. They signed Mike Edwards away from the Chiefs. Rasul Douglas was the guy they traded for last year. They need some young talent that can start pushing through the pipeline and getting ready to become starters sooner rather than later. So I think I would focus on that. And, you know, I said yesterday with the Ravens, you need to be thinking about developmental quarterback. I think they should be thinking about that as well in Buffalo. They brought back Mitchell Trubisky to be the backup to Josh Allen. I think they'd be wise to have someone that they just bring in low round that they can groom to be the low-cost backup for several years to Josh Allen in the event he gets banged up, somebody they can trust to come in. All right, let's move on to the Dolphins. Miami cannot leave the 2024 draft without addressing what, Chris?
Well, I think the biggest thing is offensive line. That would be the number one thing. I mean, again, it's not a big quarterback. We know that. It's Mike McDaniel. He's Shanahan. They want to run the ball. He's not going to abandon that, right? You need to protect Tua, who's your investment. And, you know, one, it's center, who was really good, Connor Williams. He's not there right now, right? Hurt his knee, okay? They lost their best offensive lineman and their guard, Robert Hunt, in free agency, right? And then you got Teron Armstead at left tackle, who is, you know, by all due accounts, kind of on his last leg. And I didn't mean that literally, but he's had leg issues, and he's been injured a lot. So I got to think they're looking at that more than anything there in Miami.
You know, it's funny, the phrase last leg. Like, there's only two. It's not like there's 100 legs and I'm down to my last leg. I got two. If I lose one, I'm down to my last leg. You really don't have a lot of margin for error to end up on your last leg. I don't. It's already been a stressful enough morning. You know, we were fighting earlier, even though we're past that now. That was an hour and a half ago. I look at the quarterback position, and I just wonder where they're going. And yeah, they like Skylar Thompson, but he's stuck behind Mike White. Mike White is good, not great. What are they going to do with Tua? There's no long-term deal with Tua yet. He wants one. Do you try to find somebody? Do you throw a dart on somebody that you could maybe develop and get lucky and find yourself a Brock Purdy if Tua just doesn't work out? You know, if this is the final upper out year for Tua Tagovailoa, Chris, if it doesn't work, where do you go next year? Where do you pivot? Do you just get a free agent, or do you have somebody you've been developing other than Skylar Thompson? So I'd at least be thinking about a low round quarterback that can maybe run the system and maybe be the savior if I need to pivot to one at some point, maybe even during this year, like Purdy was his rookie year in San Francisco. All right, we got to take a break. The other two teams from the AFC East, Patriots and Jets, next here on PFT Live. There is no tradition like the April Fool's Day attempted humor that falls a little short. Matthew Judon retired to take up professional equestrian show jumping. Isn't there a more official name for professional equestrian show jumping? I don't know. But just an example of some of the attempts at humor that we saw on Monday. That's a tiny horse. Where Matthew Judon is bigger than I remember.
Yeah.
He should have done something with mac and cheese. If you really want to do a good April Fool's joke, if you're Matthew Judon, it's got to be something where you've pivoted and you love mac and cheese. And there's a photo of you eating mac and cheese because he notoriously hates mac and cheese. That would have been better. That would have been in his wheelhouse.
Right, right. He could have done it. When he went to the professional equestrian show jumping, I went, what horse is going to jump with that big dude on him, on his back? That's not going to happen.
All right. Patriots draft needs. They cannot exit the 2024 draft without addressing what position?
Well, I mean, like, we know they need a quarterback, right? Right. So let's not do that one and talk about that. That's obvious. I think the other one that I would look at to go, it's fairly obvious, is offensive tackle. They got nothing for the future there right now at that position. Trent Brown's gone. Their guards are good. They're kind of good on the interior. They signed Okafor, right, from the Steelers in free agency, but there's nobody you look at to go, hey, they're kind of good there for a while. The Patriots usually believe in that. That would probably be the biggest position I look at, Mike. That and a difference-making wide receiver, but we know they got a lot of holes there in New England.
The receiving depth chart, when you look at the names, and I love KJ Osborne, he walks through the door as a starter. As a starter, him and Kendrick Bourne are the two starters.
Like the go-to guys.
To pump up that room.
Right.
They need somebody who's going to be a difference maker at that position. They have a lot of needs because the cupboard is largely bare based upon the disintegration of the team
Definitely.
Over the past couple of years. When they put out the win totals last week, like the Chiefs are the Chiefs, the Patriots are low on that list of projected over-under win totals.
That's why they're a trade-down prospect, right? Because they know they got a lot of hills to fill.
Yes, get more lottery tickets. Right. Jets draft needs next year on PFF.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
The New York Jets, they don't have a second rounder. You know, there was a suggestion from Rich Cimini of ESPN.com over the weekend. They'd maybe like to trade down from 10 to pick up a second rounder.
Yeah.
That's the Aaron Rodgers second rounder. With those selections, Chris, who must they have? What position must they address in this month's draft?
I think they're a big trade down candidate. Well, I mean, I'm sure you got the roster in front of you right now. The Jets roster is damn good. Like, there's nothing you can look at and go, well, you know, they are in desperate need here, right? I think you can look at, like, okay, their tight end, like the Brock Bowers guy at 10, that's certainly something. Oof. I do think they got to think about a tackle for the future, though. They got Tyrone Smith and Morgan Moses, right? If they want Aaron Rodgers to stay alive and be able to throw the ball for more than just 1 year, and I think for the betterment of the big picture of their team, I would say tackle is probably that position.
I want young depth behind the older veterans they brought in with injury issues. Yeah. So I need somebody who's behind Mike Williams, somebody who's behind Tyron Smith.
That too, CJ receiver.
Uzama's gone.
Sure.
They need a tight end.
Yeah.
Anything
hey,
but
screw
a
you. It's my weekend. Get off my lawn, you jerk.
Enjoy your 3 days off, lazy
<See ya>.
Bastard.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.